Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast. It's Wednesday, March 27th. You know, we don't do much with presidential horse race polls on this show, right? They can be so misleading as just a snapshot of the moment. They can therefore mislead people into thinking the outcome of a race is already baked in or predetermined way in advance so people don't vote or pay attention. We also know polls are sometimes embarrassingly wrong, given the decline of landlines and other factors. And they can be misleading because, for example, many presidents or any incumbents are often seen as unpopular. That's just our relationship with politicians. And then they win re-election anyway in so many cases because ultimately, what? An election is a choice between actual people, not just an approval rating of someone in office. But today, we're going to make an exception and lead with some results from the new Bloomberg Morning Consult poll, that came out yesterday, because it kind of changes the narrative of easy assumptions that people have been making lately. The top line in the story is that President Biden gained ground on former President Trump in 6 out of 7 key swing states where this poll was conducted. It was a poll of swing states, and that it came after 5 months of mostly consistent Trump leads, as they put it. Another finding that they broke out as a separate article carries the headline, "Poll Shows Bipartisan Support for Taxing the Rich." Now, remember Biden made that a centerpiece of his State of the Union address this month? Remember this part?
Look, I'm a capitalist. If you want a maker can make a million or millions of bucks, that's great. Just pay your fair share in taxes. A fair tax code is how we invest things to make this country great. Healthcare, education, defense, and so much more. But here's the deal. The last administration enacted a $2 trillion tax cut. Overwhelmingly benefit the top 1%, the very wealthy and the biggest corporation. And exploded the federal deficit.
So Biden from the State of the Union. We have one more along these lines that we'll play in a minute. But let's look at these poll results and also not overinterpret them with Laura Davison, Bloomberg Politics editor who focuses often on tax policy. Laura, thanks for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
First, can you describe generally what the poll found that was new in the various swing states?
Yeah, so for the first time, we've done this poll for about 6 months, and this is the first poll that we've seen Biden gaining significant ground. When we first did this back on October, it was showing Trump had a sizable lead in 5 of the 7 swing states that we surveyed, and that's really grown over the past several months. But this month, we saw a change. Biden is leading in Wisconsin. He's essentially neck and neck in both Pennsylvania and Michigan. Those are what they call the blue wall states, sort of these upper Midwest industrial former Rust Belt type states, where Biden has been spending a lot of time and energy and attention working with people on the ground there, talking with auto workers. He got the endorsement of the UAW, the United Auto Workers. So this is, not necessarily causal, but we're seeing some of that support and that time and effort show up in the polls. The other swing states that we looked at are, North Carolina, Nevada, Georgia, and Arizona. Biden still trails Trump there in all those states, but only in Georgia was where Trump was able to expand his lead. We kind of have three different groupings essentially of swing states. Those blue wall states I mentioned, sort of the Southwest, Arizona, and Nevada, and then the South, which is North Carolina and Georgia. And each of those different groupings of states sort of have different constituencies, different concerns, and kind of move together as we have been taking this poll.
Can you break that down any further? If Biden was doing well in what you call the blue wall states, that used to be sort of the blue wall of defense against the Republican getting elected president, Midwestern states primarily, but Trump won some of those in 2016. If Biden is doing better there, but not doing as well in the South and North Carolina and Georgia, also definitely swing states, does the poll give us a hint as to what to attribute that difference to?
So there's a couple things. One is where you see Biden spending time on the campaign trail have been those blue wall states. So he's been there. He's been on the ground. He's been meeting with people. And we know that this president is very good at these in-person interactions when he meets with people. So you could be seeing that show up. Also, a couple of other notable things happened, right after this poll, right before this poll went into the field. One was the State of the Union, which you played a clip of earlier, where people really got to see the president in a long form speech for the first time in a long time. And so that the president's team was very happy with the speech. They thought he did well. And there was, you know, previously a bunch of concerns, about his age, about whether he was up for the task. And if you ask Biden allies, they say, look, he proved that he is, ready for another 4 years. The other thing that happened, too, earlier this month, right before people were surveyed, was that both Trump and Biden clinched their respective parties' nominations. They got enough delegates to officially be the nominees. So we also saw earlier this month of people sort of really laser focusing in, okay, like these are the candidates. There's not going to be some surprise. It's not going to be Nikki Haley. It's not going to be some other Democrat. You know, there will, you know, this is going to be a 2020 rematch. And so we found that people, you know, are kind of really honing in and crystallizing, okay, I have two choices here and it's Trump or it's Biden.
One thing, well, let me go right actually to your specific article on the tax issues. That one's called Poll Shows Bipartisan Support for Taxing the Rich. How did you ask the question in these swing states?
So we did what we called, when we talked about it internally, sort of a blind taste test of different tax and tariff policies as well. So we asked, people to basically, do you support, raising taxes on billionaires? Do you support raising taxes on those making more than $400,000? Do you support cutting individual tax rates, raising rates on corporations, as well as asking, do you support or oppose, some of the tariff policies that Trump has proposed, including a universal 10% tariff on all imports, as well as higher tariffs, and he's floated somewhere between 60 to 100% on Chinese imports. And what we found is that when we ask about raising taxes on billionaires and those making $400,000 or up, so that's a wide swath of the wealthy, of kind of what we would call the 400,000 group is basically the top 5% of income earners, whereas, billionaires are a very, very small group in the context of the country. About 70% of people said they wanted to raise taxes on both billionaires and those making more than $400,000. So this really shows that there is a lot of support. And this is, with Republicans, Democrats, independents, people who identify as conservative, people who identify as liberal. Across the board, this was a popular idea. This is something that will be a very real policy reality in Washington come 2025. No matter who's president, no matter if it's Trump or if it's Biden, no matter who wins the House or Senate, Trump's tax cuts from 2017, large portions of them are set to expire at the end of 2025, which means that Congress faces this tax cliff and will have to decide, do we extend those tax cuts or do we, not just let them all expire and move on for them? Or the most likely scenario is some combination in between of we maybe let some of these things expire, let some of these things continue, things like the child tax credit, things like some of these, lower rates on middle income households. But what do we do in terms of the higher earners? Do we raise taxes on them? Do we impose something like a wealth tax? Do we impose higher taxes on capital gains? And what this poll shows is that, politicians, there's support behind those ideas, and they shouldn't necessarily be afraid to consider some of these options.
Here's one more clip of Biden on taxing the rich from the State of the Union.
There are 1,000 billionaires in America. You know what the average federal tax is for those billionaires? No. They're making great sacrifices, 8.2%. That's far less than the vast majority of Americans pay. No billionaire should pay a lower federal tax rate than a teacher, a sanitation worker, or a nurse. I propose a minimum tax for billionaires of 25%, just 25%. You know what that would raise? That would raise $500 billion over the next 10 years.
So Biden from the State of the Union again, and you referred to that piece of it before, but take us a little deeper in if you can, the billionaires piece in particular, because he got really specific there on saying what billionaires tend to pay now and what the minimum tax would be on billionaires going forward if he gets his way.
Yeah, and the reason he's singling out billionaires in particular are because the way that the really, really wealthy people in our country pay taxes are very different from how average people, you know, middle income people, as well as, you know, kind of, you know, upper middle class people pay taxes. You know, if you have a job, you have a certain amount of withholding taken out of your paycheck. And then if you haven't paid your full balance come April 15th, you then need to send an extra check to the IRS. If you've had more than enough taken out, the IRS sends you a check with a refund back. A lot of people are probably dealing with that, you know, this month with the filing deadline coming up. But for people who are really, really wealthy, who own businesses, who you know, don't necessarily have a job where they make a salary, but instead have lots of investments and other things, they don't have to pay taxes when their assets go up or down in value. A lot of people, they never sell, and then they're able to pass on good chunks of that to their children tax free. So you have a lot of wealth that is growing and is very real wealth, but is able to legally sort of avoid getting taxed. So because of that, Biden is saying, look, people who are really wealthy need to pay a minimum amount of taxes. The White House has done a bunch of research, found that they pay, you know, on average about 8%. Biden is saying, look, 25% is what billionaires should be paying in taxes every year. And this, is in terms of tax rates that, kind of regular people pay, that's about in the middle. The top tax rate right now for people making, you know, a little bit more than $500,000 a year is 37%. So even that 25% rate would be a little bit lower than what, people are already paying in this country.
So you're really talking about a tax on unrealized capital gains, right? If you have money in investments and that money is growing, but you're not withdrawing that money because you don't need it to live on, it's those gains that would be taxed at 25%. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes. Yeah. And this is something that that has really been popularized in the 2020 presidential campaign. You heard Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, you know, talking about these ideas. You know, there are questions about how this would work, how you would go about valuing these assets, how you would go about doing this. And there's other ways to do it too, to make it a little bit more simple, to administer. That would essentially would be Congress's role of determining, okay, what would this tax look like? What would the design look like? And how would, the IRS go about enforcing it?
Yeah, it all sounds very Elizabeth Warren. She put it a little differently. She called it a wealth tax, right? And Biden is saying a tax on billionaires, which might be more appealing to people on, you know, when Warren put it as a wealth tax, maybe people interpreted that as, well, we're just going to take your wealth, or a percentage of your wealth, whether you're making money on it or not. This is more like if your stocks or other investments are doing well and you have $1 billion in assets, then you're going to have this minimum tax. It's kind of a different framing of the same thing, would you say?
Yeah, and we didn't poll exactly how people thought about a wealth tax, but that would be a really interesting question to pose. You know, most people know that they're not billionaires, but, you know, also a good chunk of people know that they have at least some, a little bit amount of stored wealth, whether that's, you know, just money in a savings account or in a 401k or, a trust or something that there's even if it's not a lot of money, that they have, tens of thousands of dollars maybe put somewhere. And that could be a little bit more scary to people versus a billionaire tax. You're like, OK, well, that's not going to apply to me and probably will never apply to me.
Janet in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Laura Davison from Bloomberg News. Hi, Janet.
Good morning. I would like to say that Trump actually told us in his 2020 campaign how he was smart and was able to beat his taxes. And I think, the Biden campaign should play some of his old comments, because now we are actually seeing in his recent trials how he has, he wasn't lying. He actually had ways of beating it. so I just want to remind us, look at some of his the things that he told us during his 2020 campaign.
That's a great point, Janet. Yeah, he was lying to the banks, but he wasn't lying to the public when he said, hey, I'm a really rich guy, and yeah, I use every tax loophole to beat taxes. It means I'm really smart. You remember that, Laura?
Yeah, I remember that. And then we got a chance to actually see some of Trump's tax returns a couple years ago. House Democrats went through a very long process to obtain those tax records. And talking with a bunch of tax experts and auditors and people who, do the tax returns for wealthy individuals said, you know, he took some very aggressive positions in this. And this doesn't, they weren't necessarily saying, yes, he definitely broke the law. But that Trump, clearly was using, on the aggressive side of taking deductions, claiming credits, all of those kinds of things. And it's important to remember, too, and this is what people talk about a lot when they talk about reforming the tax code, is there really are kind of two different sets of tax rules. If you are, a sort of a middle income person, you have one or two jobs, maybe you own a house and you have a couple of kids, you have kind of one narrow set of tax rules that you can use. If you own a business, if you own real estate, if you have, a more complicated, a lot of investments, a more complicated financial picture, there are just a lot more credits and deductions and ways for you to minimize your tax bill, including deferring taxes, which is a very key thing in our tax code, particularly for things like capital gains, which really only apply to the wealthiest people. So this is kind of where you see this show up in the poll and show up when people are, Democrats in particular express anger about Donald Trump and his situation of saying, look, I'm not available to minimize my tax bill. We should make sure that people on the higher end of the income spectrum and the wealth spectrum are paying a lot more.
Right. Of course, in political campaign terms, the reason that Trump probably said that in the first place about beating the IRS is that he thought people would identify more with him, even if they were in ordinary income brackets, and more see the IRS as the common enemy. And maybe that's changing. I don't know if you tested that in any way in this poll or any other poll. Who are you more concerned about? The IRS enforcing the tax laws or really, 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 really rich people paying low rates of taxes?
We didn't ask that specifically, but just looking historically at different tax cuts, Trump's tax cuts in 2017 were very different than some of the George W. Bush tax cuts that came in the early 2000s or even the Reagan tax cuts in the 80s, in that Trump's tax cuts were the first tax cuts to really be widely unpopular. So we've seen a shift in society where people are, kind of from the 80s and early 2000s saying, yeah, tax cuts, good, to people sort of 2017 saying, wait a second, what am I going to benefit from this? And you saw, that these tax cuts, when they were passed, were highly unpopular, and they've stayed largely unpopular. And that's that same sort of sentiment that we see showing up in the poll here. People are saying, look, we should raise taxes on higher income people versus cutting taxes. Trump's tax cuts, to put it in context, they did cut taxes across the board, but those tax cuts were tilted towards higher earners. So, someone making $40,000 a year got a much smaller tax cut in terms of a percentage and share of the tax cut than someone making significantly more.
Just one more quick thing from the political news of the last day before you go. I think you're looking at this RFK third party race, and that he picked his running mate yesterday, Nicole Shanahan, who also has business world experience, I guess, in the tech sector. I'm not very familiar with her, but I'm curious if you have any observation as sort of a political editor with a finance bent on what that means, and any of your latest intelligence there at Bloomberg on whether RFK, if he gets on the ballot in all the states, is more likely to hurt Trump or Biden?
So his vice presidential pick is Nicole Shanahan. She's a 38-year-old tech entrepreneur. She's done a lot of work with AI and also is very interested in criminal justice, environment, reproductive rights issues. What's really interesting here, she is also quite wealthy. She is the former wife of Sergey Brin, who's one of Google founders. they had this really long, extensive launch event for her announcement yesterday to as the vice presidential pick. And it's this interesting combination of people who are saying, you know, we don't want regulation. We want the government to back off. But we also want, you know, a cleaner environment, and we want, you know, cleaner food products, and we want, you know, more exercise. It's sort of this it's interesting combination of folks. We've been polling RFK Jr. for several months now. I mean, he's getting around 9 to 10% in these swing states. But what we're finding is that he's pulling evenly between Trump and Biden. When you look at, you know, kind of a matchup that includes RFK Jr. and then a matchup that doesn't, he's pulling equally from both the Republican and the Democrat. This could change a little bit. You know, in, for the past several months, he hasn't had super high name ID. People recognize that he's a Kennedy. So that has been attractive to some Democrats. But also his policies don't 100% align with Trump's. But there's certain threads, you know, being very vaccine skeptical, very anti-lockdown, and much more libertarian in certain policies, you know, are more appealing to sort of the Trump side. So we'll see. We're keeping close tabs on that right now. But, you know, for, as you mentioned, he's not on all 50 states at the moment. So that's the, you know, his campaign's biggest challenge. But I'll note that he's raising a lot of money, including from some, you know, Silicon Valley tech billionaires. So he has the money to, you know, continue to try this effort.
Yeah, you say vaccine skeptical, others say conspiracy theory embracing. I even saw in an interview that he did with Reuters that he didn't think the measles vaccine is effective. And now with anti-vaccine backlash in this country and fewer people getting the measles vaccine for their kids, there's a measles outbreak beginning in the United States. So it's not just about COVID. That may come back to haunt him, or at least he'll have to defend that because he said that, I think, a little while ago against the measles vaccine. So a lot of RFK coverage, for better or worse, to come as we come to the conclusion of this conversation with Laura Davison, political editor for Bloomberg News. Laura, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.